You already know what time it is. It's the Why We Stayed podcast. Hit them. Well, hey, welcome back to the Why We Stayed podcast. So excited that you guys are still tuning in. If this is my mom listening 30 straight times, thank you again, Mom, for tuning in. But man, we are in for a treat today because we get to hear from another pastor, man, that has been in this thing. I was joking with him earlier today that I've probably liked, I don't know, 1,000 of his photos over the course of the past 10 years just because he runs things in a way that used to make me jealous back in the day. Anyway, long story short, just want to welcome Chris Alessi to the podcast. How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing phenomenal. I mean, I feel better than I probably should after that introduction.
Yeah.
But I could say the same, man. Yeah. It just seems to be the deal, but I'm glad to be here and I'm excited for it.
Yeah, man. And hey, as I'm looking outside, we're probably going on inch number 7 of snow here in upstate New York. Why don't you tell our listeners where you're from, and just so that, you know, if some of our upstate friends maybe can feel a little bit worse about the weather.
Yeah, well, we're really suffering for the gospel down here in Miami, Florida. probably 7 inches of rain over the last 700 years.
Wow.
So, 7 inches of snow, excuse me. But we're really suffering out here. And I mean, when I look outside and I see nothing but blue sky, it really puts everything into perspective, you know?
That's great. Well, hey, thanks so much, man, for coming on the podcast. We'll talk to you next time. Thank you. That was fun.
Yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah,
but anyway, weather aside, I certainly happy to chat with you and to get you on today. Curious, man, give us a little bit of a rundown of kind of where you're at, what your current church is, how long you've been at that church, all that kind of stuff.
Well, before I even get into that, I just want to thank you for having me on. I really do believe in podcasts like this. I think too many Christians take the church context out of their work, so they won't, you know, quote unquote, limit their audience. But that doesn't really make sense if we believe the church is the answer to the world. So yeah. I'm honored to be here. I love that we're discussing church, regardless of the audience. And I honor you for what you're doing. But I've been down here in Miami my entire life, born and raised by pastors. I'm actually a third generation pastor. My grandfather started his church in Miami 55 years ago, and the building is literally still there today. About 21 years ago, my father and our family kind of branched out to another part of Miami to do our own thing, and we planted Metro Life Church. And about 6 years ago, my grandfather called us and asked us to assume the pastorate of his church, and so that's become our South Campus. And so we've got three generations of pastors down here, and it's amazing. I've been serving as a next generation pastor, youth pastor, young adult, the whole thing, since I was 19 years old.
Wow.
Kind of had one of those voluntold moments where my dad's like, "Hey, we need a youth pastor, and you're gonna do it." So I came home, did what he needed me, and just fell in love with it, and I've been doing it ever since.
Mm. Yeah, I was just going to ask, I mean, what has really drawn you to young people? And it's funny because that answer is probably, well, I was a young person and I was voluntold to do that. But maybe share with us a little bit, because I'm sure there's some listeners, right, that feel like they maybe grew up in a church where there was a lot of expectation on them. You know what I mean? Where maybe they grew up and it was, you know, a grandparent or a parent, you know, told them, "Hey, this is what we got to do. You got to go every Sunday. You got to wear this. You got to stand up at this time, sit down at this time." Maybe share a little bit about what your upbringing was like growing up with that kind of, you know, pressure in your spiritual life.
Well, before I get into that, one of the things that I'm like really big on is just definitions, but I'm also big on like who gets to define those things. And I think if you get around someone in your life that kind of represents a parent to you, kind of that same age, and you like what their life has become, I think you should let them define things for you, even if it like doesn't always feel good. And I just think that's what I did. Like when it comes down to maybe the word is healthy or maybe the word is my own desire. I kind of let my parents define those words for me.
Sure.
And when I was 13 years old and they said I was going to be a worship leader, I was like, I'm a chubby white kid who just wants to play basketball. Like, no. But, you know, they made me do it. And I got to experience that context of ministry for a while, still do to this day. But then when I was 19, my parents were like, hey, we need a youth pastor. And I had kind of grown up, and our church was always kind of small. So I grew up where, you know, youth ministry was like 40 people in a room. Half of them are leaders. We're going to have pizza. We're going to talk missions. And then we're going to play video games. Like, that's just what we did. And so that didn't really attract me. But I had to do it. I let my dad kind of define that for me. And when I started to see that youth ministry sometimes actually can be youth doing the ministry, it was like the whole thing shifted and we started to grow and kind of blow the doors off the room and God started to move. And it's kind of weird. People ask me like when I got saved, I kind of feel like I'm getting resaved every couple of months because I'm just seeing the depth of what God does when you just do your best. Like when you're not perfect, but you just do your best, God seems to just do more and more and more. And I got to see that. And so if the question is like, how are you drawn to young people? Like, I wasn't. I actually think I left youth ministry because I couldn't handle another batch of sixth graders. Like, I just couldn't do it more than five times. But to create an environment where youth could do ministry, it just, after being in it for a little bit, it was just too hard to pass up. It was like, this is incredible.
Wow. So just to reiterate what maybe the listeners are still stuck on, because I am stuck on it, you became the youth pastor of a church at 19 years old.
19 years old. I don't know where the wisdom was in that, but I was 19 years old and they just needed someone to fill the spot for the summer. And so my dad kind of voluntold me.
Yeah.
And within 3 months, I don't say this to brag, but it was just kind of what happened. Within 3 months, we had kind of gotten to like that 85, 95 numbers of kids a week.
That's awesome.
And that had just never happened in our church.
Yeah.
And so my dad's like, hey, you know, why don't you just keep doing it until you're bad at it? And I'm like, all right, I'll keep doing it till I'm bad at it.
Oh, I love it. I love it, man. Well, that kind of leads us into this next part of the podcast. And really, one of the main reasons I wanted to get you on is I think having been a youth pastor for almost 7 years myself, having been involved in youth ministry for about 12 years of my life, you know, I've seen over the years that there's always that difficult transition. I know when I was in high school, I was in church from 17 to 18, and there were three separate youth pastors during that time. And so, so for me, and I know that the average life cycle of a youth pastor is, I think it's 18 months or something like that. And I think one of the hardest things for young people today is that we lack consistency. I think whether it's divorced homes or it's, you know, going from school to school or moving or going from friend group to friend group or whatever that is, I think we lack consistency in our life. And one of the things, Chris, that you did, man, is you wrote this incredible book that I'm holding in my hand called Up Next. And I'd love for you to share a little bit about where that idea came from and just kind of talk a little bit about you know, how you were able to really pass the baton in a way that actually brought some consistency and hope to the next youth pastor.
Well, you're so on point. And sadly, as I continue to meet people in this kind of space, like your experience from 17 to 18 with three different guys in there, that just seems to be more of the norm than anything else. And even these days, we kind of see a lot of churches kind of moving towards once a month services for whatever reason, and nothing against that, but there is a lack of consistency. And so I was actually raised in a church where I had one youth pastor for 8 years. He served for 11 years, and then he transitioned it to a guy who lasted 18 months. And it was like, it started to really follow the trend. And so I came in, did 5 full years, was ready to transition out just because of the season of life I was in and what the church needed. And when that happened, I sat with my pastor, my dad, and said, you know, what's next? And we agreed on this guy. And so I left, knew I only had a couple of months to raise him up. And I started looking for books and I didn't see anything out there for the church context. And that's when I started to look into some research of the very statistic you just shared, look back over my life to friends I went to Bible college with and saw that they were kind of following the trend too. And it just broke me because that's not who I am. I'm a result of staying in one place when it was exciting and when it was horrifying. I'm a product of staying in one place, even though I was getting kicked under the table in every meeting we ever had for sharing an opinion that I thought was going to save the church. And I'm this 21-year-old kind of speaking out of turn. I'm the product just staying in one place. And I looked at all my friends and I'm thinking, man, I wonder how much seed they're leaving to be harvested by someone else because they keep moving. And so I was like, apparently our church has something. I've got to raise up this next guy anyways. So I started writing him a letter. And that letter turned into 10, 15, 20, 25 pages. And I'm like, okay, this isn't a letter anymore. This is something that if I'm going to work to try to raise up one person and just help him see that he will win in the long term if he sits around long enough just to see some of that seed come to harvest, I might as well try to open it up to whoever is in a similar position. So that's what Up Next kind of became. It started as a letter to one youth pastor, and today it's a letter to anyone in ministry.
Well, that's great, man. I think that, you know, part of what you said, I think, is critical, you know, is that there's many youth pastors that maybe don't get to play a part in who is coming up next, or maybe there's a transition from a youth pastor that maybe it didn't end well for him, and so rather than passing the baton is fumbled, or rather than making a clean and a good transition, there's actually sheep that are scattering, and now the person who's up next has to actually be more of a guy who's rebuilding the fence to try to go get all the sheep, as opposed to someone that can really, you know, start on the right foot. And so I'm encouraged, man, because as I look at this book and you know, just know your heart, you know, I think it is just an exciting thing for someone who feels like they're either up next or maybe they're not up next yet, but man, I feel like they could certainly get, you know, some incredible nuggets from this book. And you know, I think for me, I guess the next question would be for, you know, for a young person who is listening that maybe feels like they're next. Besides buying this book, what advice would you have for them that maybe they're not yet in it, but man, they feel like this next year, this is, you know, 2019 is my year, or, you know, whatever they feel. For those that feel like they're up next, what advice would you have?
Well, the reason it's called Up Next and the reason the book kind of has a basketball aesthetic is because in basketball, if you want to play, you got to come and you got to call next. And then there's a couple of things that have to happen. So you have to declare I'm next, but then there's somebody on the court that has to acknowledge that. Someone on the court has to say, yeah, okay, you have downs, you're next. But then it goes back to you and you got to stick around long enough to actually be next. And that could mean anything. When you say you're next, that doesn't mean you get to decide how long they get to play. I mean, sometimes games to seven take a year and a half because these guys can't score anything.
Yep.
So it really comes down to just sticking around long enough to be next.
It's really good.
And this is one of the things that a lot of people don't really see. Like, if you do your part well and you really believe everything that we believe about God, you're not going to lose. You may not win the way you think, or you may not win when you think, but here's how you lose. You take yourself out of the game thinking it's better to go play on the outside courts, and by the time you get there, well, someone else is playing, or it's too hot, or in your case, it's snowing.
Yep.
You it's a whole different game. So then you come back inside and you no longer have next because you lost your momentum.
It's very good.
So I'm a product of just sticking around long enough. And listen, it's just not youth ministry. It's what's after that, and then what's after that, and then what's after that. It's sticking around long enough to continue to allow God to prepare you for what's next for you.
Mm. Wow. Dude, that is really incredible. For anyone listening, if even that little chapter highlight doesn't get you fired up to read it, man, that is incredible. And I think for me as a former basketball player myself, I say that tongue in cheek because I got cut from my high school basketball team, but that's okay.
So did Jordan.
I mean, yes, fair enough. But Jordan was not a 5'10 white guy who can't jump. Anyway,
From what we know.
From what we know. Fair enough. Well, dude, hey, listen, if I'm listening to this when I'm, you know, I'm almost 30, it's actually my birthday tomorrow. I'll be turning 30.
Wow.
Quick little shout out. Thanks, everyone.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. But if I'm a young person that's, you know, 17, 18, and I hear something like this, I hear this podcast and I go, stick around, like stay, get planted, be a part of a life-giving church. All of that stuff makes sense, and it makes sense when you first get that call, or you first start attending that church, or your emotions are in it, your feelings, you feel like waking up at 5:30 and putting out the cones and standing on the parking team. You feel like playing on the middle school worship team, even though there's six kids that are sleeping in the back. Like you feel like going and going and going. But my question is, that's all good and well what you say when you feel like you're up next and when you feel like this is what you're supposed to do. And really my question to you is, what happens when you don't feel like it anymore? What happens for the young person listening that has stayed? They have been faithful. They have chosen to commit, but yet they feel like they're not being called on. What advice would you have for them?
Well, another thing I put in the book, it's a chapter called Define the Win. And I just think a lot of people allow other people to define their wins, or they define their wins by default. And we make it seem like if I'm not preaching, then I'm not winning. If I'm not leading the main song, I'm not winning. If I'm not the one that gets a 1 minute clip of me to post on social media, then I'm not winning. If it's not this year, then I'm not winning. But I think if you look at any professional sports team, I mean, unless you're UCF trying to declare yourself the national championship, like you, only one person really gets to win every year. So yeah. Everyone else has to like define their win differently.
Yeah.
And to stick around as a parking team member for 3 years, you know, that's a win because you've been a consistent presence in the life of a lot of young people. And if your win is only to be the leader, you're giving up a lot of other small wins. Like you have been a consistent presence for someone. And then that's what I would ask that person. Like, what is the win? Is it only a win if you win? Or is it a win if the students are winning? If the people you're ministering to, is it a win if they're winning? Because having any consistent presence in the youth group is a win for people because it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
So I would ask that person, like, What are you doing to define your win?
Wow.
And I would probably start that kind of conversation with them.
And it's so interesting, man, because we were talking about consistency just a few minutes ago, right? And it's like the very thing that we as young people have lacked is the very thing that we need to provide for the next batch of young
Absolutely.
People, which is consistency. Oh man, I think that is awesome. Well, you know, I'm sure for you, man. I mean, I'm sure there were moments when you were waiting to be next. I mean, I know you were 19 when you started, but I'm sure there were moments when you were a teenager or when you were, you know, at the church where maybe you felt like, man, I don't want to stick around much longer, or man, I'm frustrated with this, or I feel like I can do this better, or you know, whatever. What were some of the reasons, even for you personally, that caused you to stay, that caused you to just remain connected to the church and then even beyond that, but stay connected to your faith?
Well, that's a great question. Honestly, part of me constantly thought about, if I leave, I start at zero. If I go anywhere, I start at zero. Now, leaving the faith has never really been a challenge for me because I've kind of always gone into it knowing that if God made the sun and the moon and said the moon was going to govern the dark, that means that God's okay with some dark periods. Like God didn't say, let's make sure there's light 24/7. He's kind of okay with moments of darkness. So he's okay if I question my faith. God is not small to where he freaks out if I'm not 100% happy with him right now. Or if I'm not 100% happy with like my life, or if I'm fully aware of where he's at. I mean, he was okay with Elijah running to the cave. He was okay with some of David's moments in Psalms where it's like, why has God abandoned me? And he was okay with his own son saying, why have you forsaken me? I mean, he's okay with that. So leaving the faith was never really hard for me because I just felt like God knew I'd have up and downs, and he was okay with that. And then the other thing about not leaving the church, part of it is because I've just got a very authoritarian father. He was not letting me go anywhere. But in moments where maybe another job offer came in that seemed on the surface better than what I had or whatever it may be, I just recognized that I can do more in 15 years if I have 15 years of experience here than I can in 15 years if I have 2 years of experience here, 4 years of experience there, 3 years of experience there. So yep. If I stick around, the clout and the weight I will carry in 15 years, which is, it just kind of goes back to defining your win. Like if your only win is something that can happen in a year, like you're not dreaming enough. You're not really seeing big enough. But I just started to see like what I wanted to be here in like 10, 15, 20 years, I would need to stick around to really walk in that.
No, I think what you've experienced, Chris, is there's this balance between patience, but also, I was hoping to say something really profound there, and I totally missed it. But there's a difference between like being patient and just being consistent and being. Maybe patient and present. Okay. We're gonna rewind. Here we go. Awesome, Chris. Well, there's a difference between being patient, but being present. And I think you really seem to have walked that in such a great way. You know, because I think there's a lot of people that can't be patient and therefore they can't be present because they're thinking about. I should really be here, or I should really be doing this, or I should really be doing that. And then it actually makes them super ineffective in the present. And, you know, I think that, hearing that you not only stayed because, you know, your family and the whole thing, but you stayed because you felt like, man, this is where I need to be. This is where God's called me to be. I think that's absolutely incredible. And you know, I think maybe one of the final questions that we can probably spend a little bit of time on is, I run into so many young people that maybe feel like even as they're hearing this, they just feel like, hey, like the church thing was something that I tried, like it was an experience that I had. I went to a summer camp when I was younger, or I, you know, went to some YMCA camp or some basketball camp and they did like this weird little preach thing or whatever, like, and I tried it and I like saw my family try it, but it's just really not for me. You know, what advice would you have to someone like that, that maybe has listened all this way through this podcast and they go, well, yeah, like, I don't really feel like my next has anything to do with church. I don't feel like my next has anything to do with being a pastor. My next has nothing to do with any of that stuff. What advice would you give to them?
Well, if it comes to attending church, that what's next for them has nothing to do with being a part of the church, I would say that if you're discouraged in any way from the church or God, there's definitely moments where that's just normal. But I would ask, is that person giving God credit for the good, or are they only assigning blame for the bad? And the same goes for the church. Like, whenever I hear people say they can't believe in God because there's bad in the world, I'm like, okay, well then who gets the credit for the good in the world? And I'm not going to be the first person to say that the church is perfect. I probably would never even say that. But I'm also going to say that, like, imagine where the world would be without the church. But if there's somebody that's attending church, that's serving, but they're like, what's next for me does not involve pastoral ministry, does not involve full-time ministry in a staff position. If that's you, if you're listening to this and that's you, you have no idea how much I applaud you. I am so grateful for people like you, because this narrative out there that the only way to be in ministry is to be a pastor is so incorrect. There are so many gifts of God. Every king needs a priest, but every priest needs a king. We need people that are taking ministry and making it more than just a 40-minute sermon on Sunday and more than just my ability to sing. I mean, there's ministry happening all over the planet. I met with a guy yesterday who's I just happened to be in the same room as him, who's making this movie for Sony. He's like a part with like Steph Curry. He's way bigger than me, but I just happen to be in the same room with this guy, and he's doing ministry at a level I probably never can. I mean, if there are people out there that aren't buying into the narrative that ministry only happens as a pastor or it only happens in the four walls of the church, if there are actually people out there that aren't buying into that narrative, I actually think that the sun got a little bit brighter and the sky is a little more blue because they're right. We don't have to only be up next in the church. And as a pastor who does feel called to take over my father's church whenever he believes that's the time, even I'm not limiting my leadership of ministry to just the church. Even I'm like, no, ministry is literally what I'm doing with my entire life. Technically, if you're going to strap on the term Christian to your life, you're also saying you're in ministry. Whether or not there's church context involved is neither here nor there. It's just we're all ministering. So I would actually applaud them and say thank you, because too many people have been told by someone when they were 13 that they were going to be a pastor, and now they think their only win in life is operating in their quote-unquote calling of being a pastor or being a missionary, and that's just not always true.
Yep. Wow.
Dude, I got really into that one.
No, man, that is probably so freeing for a lot of people, because I think it is really... And I'm sure you've heard this phrase, because it's a real, it can be a really difficult word to hear, but the word manipulation, and especially in a spiritual context, can be so damaging, because you don't just think that you're letting the other person down, you feel like you're letting God down. And so now it's not just, I really think I should do this. It's like, no, God told me to do it. And I just want to reiterate that freedom that you just spoke, Chris. Man, if anyone's listening that feels like you're trapped in a calling or that you're trapped in a position, I just rebuke that, because God has come, who Christ has set free is free indeed. And Jesus has come to truly set us free. And so I just hope that, just like you said, man, I hope that there's so much freedom to be able to continue to explore calling while being planted in a church, but experience and explore calling outside of church is absolutely a part of God's plan, for sure.
And would you mind if I spoke to that one more time?
Please, man, yeah.
I don't necessarily see biblical evidence for somebody having a calling or even a purpose as much as we're called to be people of calling and people of purpose. We're supposed to bring calling and purpose to everything we do. It would not make sense for God to say, go and make disciples of all nations, and you can only do it in certain contexts. You can only do it in the church. I mean, that. Why would God say, go and make disciples of all nations, and then say, you as a college student have to go to class and spend 4 years of your life not in ministry, because you've got to be in school. So you're going to sit in a class for 45 minutes, and you're not operating in your calling while you're sitting in that class for 45 minutes. You're really just watching The Office in the back of the room trying to waste time, because your calling is the church. Meanwhile, you need that education, but you're going to completely overlook the education because you think your calling is full-time ministry. And it's like, wait a minute. Yep. We're people of calling. I'm supposed to bring purpose to the classroom, to the lunchroom, to my sports team, which these are like the three examples youth pastors give, right?
very good.
I have to be a person of calling wherever I go. And I'm not limited to one thing. You don't hear that in scripture anywhere. In fact, a lot of the verses in Corinthians speak to our wide open, spacious life.
Yeah.
So again, if there is someone that's hearing this and is saying, yeah, that's me, like I really do applaud them.
Yeah. Dude, I think that brings so much clarity, man. I think that is awesome. Well, dude, thanks for the time, man. This podcast almost didn't happen today because Chris really ran into quite a buzzsaw today. Chris, why don't you share a little bit about what happened here earlier today, if you wouldn't mind?
Well, I was on a flight around 6:30 in the morning to come from Houston back to my beautiful city of Miami, and we took off, and within 20 minutes of the flight, the flight attendant was trying to pour somebody coffee. They missed the cup. And they got me and poured boiling hot coffee all over my arm, all over my back. I actually have like first degree burns on my arm right now. And I'm trying to decide whether I'm a Christian or not and how I go about it when we hang up. But I mean, I had to sit in a 3-hour flight covered in coffee, icing my arm.
Part of me, well, first off, let me acknowledge that. I'm so sorry that happened to you, Chris. sorry, that was the second time I'd heard the story, so I was pretending like it was fresh. But part of me wants to just let the podcast play out and really listen to your phone call. I just feel like we should not invade your privacy. But anyway, if anyone would like to hear Chris's phone call, we'd be happy to email that to you after the podcast. But we will not include that on the podcast. Chris, thanks so much, man. More than anything, I just want to again thank you for your commitment to do not what your parents have told you to do, but to continue to follow what you truly have experienced and felt like God has called you to do. I'm thankful, to have just from a kind of a back row seat had a chance to really see, just really scratch the surface at what God's been able to do. And for all those that are listening, man, I genuinely want to encourage you. Not only should you follow Chris on Instagram, but take a look at this book Up Next. We're going to be giving it away as well right on our Instagram page. So tag your friends, all that stuff, and you'll get entered in to win. But Chris, just want to thank you again, man, for joining us, and can't wait to go to Miami and record a live podcast next time instead of upstate
New York. We've got to make it happen. We've got to make that happen. And thanks for having me today. This has been awesome, and I really do believe in the mission of this podcast.
Awesome. Thanks, man. Talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon, bud.